Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, this prime time edition on this Tuesday, December 7th, 2010. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn, taking you for the next 45 minutes as we discuss the world of sports. A lot to do, a lot going on this Tuesday. Busy Tuesday, as stories just started coming out of nowhere in regards to the sports world. They're going to begin with Albert Haynesworth. Albert Haynesworth has been suspended for the rest of the season by the Washington Redskins. The remaining four games, he will not be paid for that. If the suspension is upheld, he's appealing the suspension. There's no reason why it won't be upheld. He will not be paid for those four games, which comes out to about $3.5 million. Haynesworth, you know, this was something that I think the Redskins should have done a long time ago in regards to Haynesworth, in terms of just cutting their, you know, in terms of cutting their losses. When they had opportunities to move him in the preseason, in the offseason, during training camp for a fourth or even fifth round pick, they tried to get more for him when it wasn't realistic. Everybody knows, not so much based on his salary, based on his attitude, and also what he was making as well. Teams were not trying to take up a lot of that salary, you know, with a possible work stoppage coming up in the NFL. So, you know, the Redskins, to me, waited entirely too long to do this. They should have did this, again, a long time ago. This thing has been, you know, ongoing since the offseason, going back to, you know, basically mini camps in April, when Haynesworth refused to report. You know, then he takes the $20 million bonus, and at that point, you know, Shanahan thinks he's going to report. He still doesn't report like $20 million roster bonus, and you know, he's basically been a pain in the Redskins, minds from then on. You thought that earlier this season, when he had actually had a couple good games, that it had kind of cooled off, but that was just, you know, fool's gold, so to speak, as it picked up again last week. Haynesworth, you know, went out, you know, had a bad practice on Thursday, went out Thursday evening, got sick, came in Friday, did not practice, and then of course, Mike Shanahan deactivated him for Sunday's game against the Giants. Yeah, I mean, that rumor was going around, you know, he was hungover. I mean, whatever the case is, it was time for this thing to end. Haynesworth, it has been, to me, the poster child of what's been wrong with the Washington Redskins for the past decade. A guy with the one difference being he's actually in his prime. And normally, the Redskins have been overpaying guys who are clearly past their prime, i.e., Deion Sanders, Bruce Smith, just to name a few. But, you know, he's actually still in his prime and can still play on a high level. But, you know, you can't trust him. I mean, he doesn't finish seasons. He stays injured, out of shape. His motivation goes, like, you know, it goes in and out. You know, when he wants to play, he can dominate. When he doesn't, you know, he'll do a play like, you know, was the case of the Eagles, where he laid on the ground for seemingly forever while Michael Vick, you know, surveyed the landscape for about 30 minutes and threw a touchdown pass. So, I mean, that's Albert Haynesworth in the best shell. And again, the Washington Redskins have absolutely nobody to blame but themselves. Again, you can't put this on the Bruce Allen, Mike Shanahan regime. They inherited him. I think, you know, for the most part, Shanahan could have done a little better job in terms of handling this. But for the most part, this was all on Albert Haynesworth. As far as, you know, his unprofessionalism, the way he went about it, like a, you know, like a 350-pound baby with the whining and, you know, and refusing to play in the 3-4 system, and just, you know, it was always something ongoing with him. So I'm not putting that on Shanahan, but this to me is on a reflection of the Washington Redskins organization, in particular one Daniel Snyder. Daniel Snyder went out there on March 1st, 2009, and threw $41 million in guaranteed money at Albert Haynesworth, $100 million total at Albert Haynesworth, you know, before, you know, like before, basically before the sun rose okay? I mean, he goes out there, gets this guy, and again, it's been a disaster ever since, despite the fact that they need the offensive line help. We're not even going to get into that aspect. But to me, this is on Daniel Snyder. It's not on Serrano. It's not on anybody else but Daniel Snyder, because he's the one that signs the checks. And from, and ultimately, and especially at that point in time, made the big decisions on bringing in key free agents, or any free agent at all, and for that matter, at all. So, you know, in a season that's been, you know, up and down for the Redskins, it hasn't been as bad as some may think, despite the record they're only 5-7. This probably is, this I would have to say is a positive. This is a good day for the Redskins, as far as I'm concerned. It's addition by subtraction. And you can look at it, I mean, as Redskins fans, you can look at it one way and say, hey, another, another, it's added drama, another, you know, soap opera. But, you know, but to me, it's like the soap opera is over. I mean, the stuff in the offseason, as far as how they, you know, how, as far as how they will officially part ways, will take care of itself. They'll take care of itself. But to me, this was a necessary step for the Washington Redskins. Just so we want to talk about this, about whether he's going to play, is he not going to play, how many plays is he playing, how many plays is he going to participate in, which downs is he going to come in, you know, what's going on in the locker room. It was just enough already. It was enough. I mean, this was a week-to-week thing that certainly had an effect on that locker room. There's a lot of questions. With a franchise that cannot handle adversity, as it, you know, it's not, frankly, it's not strong enough to handle this kind of adversity. You know, I'm not talking about, I'm not talking about Sean Taylor, that type of adversity. That's a different type of adversity. I'm talking about within stuff that happens within the locker room. And they're trying to build something. And to me, keeping Albert Haynesworth would not even through the season, would not help them go forward into building what they're trying to build. So you have to be happy if you're a Redskins fan for this move. As far as where he lands, I mean, he can't play for anybody for the rest of the season. Off season, we'll see. I'm sure some team will take a risk on him on the cheap and go from there. I mean, there's no question in his talent. Again, his work ethic is a joke. His commitment is a joke. And, we'll see. I mean, but again, it's not the Redskins' problem, and it was certainly time for them to move on from the Albert Haynesworth saga. And hopefully this will be the last, as a Redskins fan, that we'll have to deal with in terms of Albert Haynesworth. Just getting started here on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. This prime time edition, 38 minutes after the hour. Still to come, the Jets get some humble pie, and the Nats make a splash. We'll talk about that and much, much more on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We'll be right back. Welcome back to this edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call Prime Time. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn. 40 minutes after the 8 o'clock hour. Of course, I'm taking you up until 9:15, going 45 minutes tonight. You can hit me up, of course, at www.twitter.com/WilliamGerald or Facebook.com. I'm giving you the whole web address, Facebook.com/Cyril Quinn. Hit me up. Any questions or comments? Top 5 quarterbacks are as you, if you certainly, if you looked at my Facebook page, top 5 quarterbacks are out, amongst other comments that I made in regards to last night's shellacking on Monday Night Football as the New York Jets took a backhand, a couple backhands to the face at the hands of the New England Patriots, 45-3. And for me, this really, we know how good the Patriots are. We know Brady, Belichick, the whole nine yards. But to me, this really exposed the New York Jets for what they really are. And that's a bunch of a bully team running his mouth, who is just not quite there yet. They are a very good team, but I don't think the Jets can win a Super Bowl this year. Now, you want to call it a classic overreaction on my part? Fine, call it that. But when I look at them and I compare them to the Pittsburghs, the Baltimores, thinking about obviously New England, they're not good as them. Some of these other teams in the AFC, the top echelon teams, they're just not there yet. Last night, to go out there, it's one thing to lose to the Patriots. I mean, Pittsburgh got knocked around by the Patriots. I mean, Patriots are the best team in football right now. Make no mistake about that. They're the best team in football. And to me, if you ask me to pick a team to win a Super Bowl today, right now, December 7th, it would be the New England Patriots. But putting that aside, the Jets, for all the bravado, for all the talk, to go out there and just completely just roll over and get knocked around the way he did is embarrassing. And to me, it just goes to show you that when they were winning those games, those close games, which I did not criticize them for. I thought it was, hey, a good team, in the NFL, you can lose at any time. Good teams know how to find a way to win games. I was, maybe this team is, I was sipping the Jet Kool-Aid as well. But in reality, those bad teams that they were beat probably were masking some of the obvious issues that they have. And I understand that Jim Leonard is interviewed with the big injury. The Jet coaches really just, wallowed about how big that injury was. But, Jim Leonard is not Troy Polamalu, okay, as far as the safety goes. I know he's important to that defense, but you still have other all-pro caliber players playing defense with New York Jets. And to me, that's where you can talk about San Francisco, three interceptions. You can talk about what the offense didn't do. Still had 152 yards rushes. They ran the ball well, despite the margin of defeat. But it was all about their defense. I mean, that's a Jets calling card. Tom Brady is the MVP of the league. He's the best quarterback in the world. We all know this. But what he did last night, it wasn't even fair. It wasn't fair. And I understand, the Patriots scheme better than anybody in the league. They get personnel to fit their schemes better than anybody in the league. We know this. But some of those, some of the receivers just were so open, it was ridiculous. I mean, there were no adjustments made by the Jets. Brady had all day to throw the ball. I understand he got sacked a couple times. But for the most part, he was able to sit back comfortably in the pocket and do what he wanted. And to do really much, his throwing lanes were wide open. And when the Jets have been challenged, think about their three losses. Opening night, they lose to Baltimore at home. Okay, week one, anything can happen in the NFL. We see that many seasons, many times. But they come off a bye, and get shut out at home by a depleted Green Bay Packers team that has about a million injuries. And now they just absolutely get abolished by the New England Patriots, who are, again, the best team in football. But then, listen, nobody will ever mistake this New England team for the 85 Bears. Trust me. They're not that good. They're a good team, but they're not great. They're not a great team. There are no great teams in the NFL this year. That's why there's so much parity, because no team has really stood out to say, hey, we're the favorites. Even though England is not the clear favorites. I mean, they're the favorite. They're a slight favorite. They're not the clear cut. They're not a clear cut favorite in my eyes. So, the Patriots, they just go out there, lay the egg, and just get exposed for what they really are. They're a bully team, and we'll see how they respond this week against Miami. And even after the Miami game this week, they have at the Meadowlands, they have two. Their schedule is very brutal. At Pittsburgh, at Chicago, home to Buffalo. Buffalo has played everybody tough over the past months. So that would not be an easy game, despite the fact that the Jets would be hosting it. as far as New England goes, again, New England, you know, it's amazing to watch them as we think that they're secretly rebuilding. They have all these draft picks. The defense is still one of the worst in the league as far as the stats goes, in terms of yards. But they just find a way. And again, Brady is playing the best football in his career. He's even playing better now than he was in 2007, when he was MVP and had the 50 touchdowns. And look what they've done ever since they got rid of Randy Moss. They put up 23 points against Baltimore, 23 to San Diego, 28 against Minnesota, 45 twice, back-to-back weeks, 31 against Indy, and 39 against Pittsburgh. Only bad game they had, of course, back Cleveland. The last game that they lost was to the Cleveland Browns a couple few weeks back. So, again, Belichick must have knew something the rest of the world did not know in getting rid of Randy Moss. The offense, the offense looks unstoppable. They have midgets playing wide receiver. That's the funny part about it. So we'll see what happens, with the rest of the season and what direction those two teams go in. New England has done everything, but clips are outright home for the best in the AFC. They have their game up on Pittsburgh as well as the Jets. But in reality, they have tiebreakers over everybody. They have tiebreakers over Baltimore, tiebreakers over Pittsburgh, beat San Diego, beat Indianapolis. They beat everybody other than Kansas City, and they're 2 full games ahead of them. So Kansas City is not going to catch them either. So unless something crazy happens, Wrigley should have home field advantage throughout the course of the playoffs. I understand that they still have some tough games left themselves. You figure they'll be able to navigate that enough and come out with home field advantage throughout the playoffs, throughout the AFC playoffs. Still to come, the Nationals. The Nationals make a worthy signing. And Josh McDaniels is out after just 2 seasons. We'll talk about who's to blame as far as the Josh McDaniels experiment goes. Something like that, and much more still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, this primetime edition. I'm your host, Will Quinn. I'll be right back. Minutes after the 8 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, this primetime edition of your host, Cyril Quinn, taking you, of course, to 9:15. You can hit me up on Twitter.com/WilliamGerald or at Facebook.com/Cyril Quinn. The Nationals go out there and sign Jason Worth to, big, obviously a huge contract, 7 years, $126 million, and there are a lot of questions about giving a 31-year-old that amount, not so much the money, but the years. The years is always, in baseball especially, the key as far as I'm concerned. Not even so much the dollar figure. Once you get to the level that Jason Worth is at, it's always about the years. 7 years is a long time. It's a long time. But to me, this is a good signing, and a signing, frankly, that the Nationals had to make, for a number of reasons. But more importantly, just to make a splash. The Nationals were starting to develop a reputation for being a cheap organization, which will not draw free agents to D.C. They had to overpay, of course. And, in Jason Worth, to me, you get a guy who is a 5-tool player. I know that term is used and abused, but this guy can do, what can he not do? The guy can hit for power. He could he left the league at Rebels last year. He could he's hit in the postseason. He can field his position. He has a lot. He's a cannon for an arm. He can steal bases. I mean, there's really nothing he can't do. He's not great. Okay, he's not a great player. He's not Albert Pujols here, but he is a all-star caliber. And as far as market, to me, as far as market value, worth every dime. As far as market value, when you see Adrian Gonzalez get $154 million, or when you see, he's not as good. You see a Mark Teixeira get $108 million. His numbers are not as good as Teixeira's, but again, he got 126. Teixeira got 180 a couple years ago. And bottom line is, the Nationals had to do something. They had to. And to me, this thing will pay dividends even when his career is over in Washington. Even if he goes out there as a complete bust, other free agents now will look to the Nationals and say, hey, you know what? They're not cheap. This is a place that's going to spend money, and we might have an interest in playing for them. Because that's what it's about. I mean, you can talk about the city. You can talk about the school system. With Mike Hampton a few years ago in Colorado. You can talk about all these extra intangibles. It comes down to who's pushing out the dump. That's the bottom line. If you pay them, they will come. I don't care who's calling the shots. I don't care what organization it is. And Jason Worth, for $126 million, Jason Worth would have went to, Zimbabwe to play baseball. So the Nationals, to me, improved their lineup. You put him with Zimmerman. There are rumors that they might add a first baseman to Carlos Peña, Al LaRoche. There are also some rumors that they are possibly trying to go after Cliff Lee. Now, the Nationals deny the amount of years. They deny the 7-year $200 million. But they do that, but they don't deny the fact that they have interest in Cliff Lee, but not for 7 years. 5 to 6 at the most. So, again, at a certain point the Nationals had to spend money at some point. You can only ask your fan base to take somebody 120, 150 lost seasons and expect them to show up to that ballpark. So, again, I like to sign it myself. I've watched him for a while now. He's a very good player. Again, he's a guy who has 13 career postseason home runs. He's won a championship. You weakened that division opponent as far as the Phillies. So, you weakened them, obviously, a bit. I'm sure that they will try to fill the spot, but they're not going to find anybody on the market as good as Jason Worth. They'll probably try to, fill his position from within their farm system. I mean, as they have a lot of top prospects coming up. But again, this is a good day as far as the Nationals. As far as if you're a national, watch a Nationals fan, you should look forward to 2011 with he and Ryan Zimmerman on the same team in the same lineup. Of course, you also in terms of baseball, you had Derek Jeter. Basically come out and acknowledge the signing, that he's going to be back with the Yankees, 3 years, $51 million, and he came out there and put his feelings on the table. I mean, he was not happy in terms of the negotiations being public. Came out, gave you the spiel. Want to be a Yankee his whole life, and so on. Only thing the problem I have with Jeter is, bottom line is, you're in New York. You're not in Topeka, Kansas. It's going to be public. This idea that, you live this private life. Derek, you're a movie star. Okay? I mean, you are probably the biggest, most popular sports figure, arguably, in the history of New York City in the last 25 years in New York. Obviously, it was kicked off by the organization leaking the negotiations. Get over it. You are Derek Jeter. It is the cost of fame. You get $51 million for 3 years. You're the highest paid shortstop, despite the fact that that you're not the best shortstop. You know, move on. And again, I've been siding with the Yankees from the start of this process, in terms of the money that they paid him, in terms of how they dealt with the negotiations. And there's no way that the negotiations were not going to leak out in New York City. And there are no secrets in New York, trust me, when it comes to the sports world. It's the number one market in the country. So I have a problem with the Yankees and how they, you know, handled the ordeal. Bottom line is, he's getting $51 million for 3 years, and his skill set is on the decline. So, you know, we'll see how that pans out. Of course, the Adrian Gonzalez trade has been confirmed, has been made official. Basically, he's going to sign an extension for 7 years, $154 million. It's not official, as, you know, the Red Sox wait until April, so they want to pay, so they want to deal with the luxury tax for him to sign on the dotted line. He'll play for his current contract, which is for $6.3 million in 2011, and then after that, the extension that he will sign, 7 years, $154 million. Kicking. There's still some big names out there. It's on the hot stove. Adrian Beltre is one of them, of course. Cliff Lee is still out there, though. Again, I'll be the most shocked man in America if he didn't end up in pinstripes with the Yankees. You have a couple other guys who are still out there on the market. Carl Crawford, who now all of a sudden thinks he's, you know, Barry Bonds, okay? You know, just because Jason Worth got $126 million. There are rumors that Crawford would be asking for $180 million, which is nuts to me. Anybody that gives Carl Crawford $180 million needs to have their head examined. I would give Carl Crawford, you're going to have to based on market value, but I truly don't believe Carl Crawford is a $100 million a year player myself. But based on the fact that based on market value, you're going to have to give him over $100 million. Okay, you have the Rangers, Angels, the biggest, some of the teams that you're hearing about it. I don't think the market is that great for Crawford, considering his demands that he's making as far as the money that he wants. So we'll see what happens with that. So the call on this first edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, the Josh McDaniels era is over at Denver. We'll talk about whose fault it is and where Denver problem will look to go next. That's still to come, and much, much more on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call Prime Time. We'll be right back. Welcome back to this latest edition of the show of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call Prime Time Edition. I'm your host, Real Quick, as we approach the top of the hour, 9 o'clock. I'm taking you, of course, to 9:15 on this Prime Time Edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. And you had another coach get his walking papers in the NFL, the third in season firing of the season. Coach Josh McDaniels, who joins Wade Phillips and also bad children in terms of getting fired. You know, from all the reports that you read, you know, this thing was coming, especially considering the Spygate 2 thing, Spygate 2, in regards to him taping a San Francisco 49ers walkthrough, which was just stupid. I mean, it is beyond, like, somebody should have reminded him that he doesn't have 3 Super Bowls, that he can't get away with that. He doesn't have 3 Super Bowls like his, you know, like his mentor, Bill Belichick. I mean, he does that, especially having a terrible season that the Broncos are having. I mean, he was asking to get fired. But, you know, it's easy to point the finger at him. You know, cocky coach, my way or the highway, didn't work out, wanted to trade this player, wanted to get rid of that player, you know, drafted some Tebow. Easy to blame McDaniels. Players, you know, couldn't motivate the players. But to really, I'm pointing at one man and one man only, and that's Pat Bowlen. Pat Bowlen, Brian McDaniels, and basically gave him the keys to the car. Think about this. You have a 16-year-old, okay, 17-year-old, just got his license, okay? Instead of going out there and getting him a hoopty, are you really going to allow him to drive, you know, to drive your, you know, 2009 Mercedes? I mean, let's be real about the situation. You know, this guy had no prior head coaching experience. Yes, he was a successful coordinator with New England on that 2007 Patriot team that broke all kinds of records for scoring, and Tom Brady, man, he lost 9 yards. I understand that. But you allow this dude, you hire this dude, and you allow him to trade your franchise quarterback. You allow him to move one of the best wide receivers in football, and then you go and allow him to draft a quarterback, a guy who would not have gotten drafted before the third round, maybe even would have lasted to the fourth round, in Tim Tebow, and you draft him with your number one pick, basically. I mean, with your number one pick. With your number one pick, excuse me, your first round pick. Again, a guy who, again, will not have a long career in this league. If Tim Tebow plays longer than 4 or 5 years, 3 years, I'd be shocked, to be honest with you. As you look at his skill set, so you allow him to do all these things, and you know, what do you expect? I mean, what did Pat Bowlen expect was going to happen? Give the guy all this, you know, give the guy who had never been a head coach in the league, all this control. You know, it's hard. It's almost impossible to be a head coach and general manager at the same time in the NFL. It's just too much work. I would say two guys get away with it, okay, and do it successfully. Bill Belichick, who's been a bastard, and even Bill Belichick has Scott Paoli. Let's not forget that. Paul Sparrow's, to a lesser extent, got the Cowboys to the playoffs and built a very good nucleus in terms of Romo, Terrence Newman, and DeMarcus Ware. But for the most part, it does not work out. Look at Mike Holmgren back in his Seattle days. Okay, Seattle was ready to fire him before they made him relinquish that GM title. Next thing you know, Seattle's in the Super Bowl. I mean, you allow this dude. Again, this guy, the youngest coach in the league, 32 years old, 33 years old, and you give him basically complete control of your franchise. I mean, he's drafting players. He's certainly having a say in terms of free agents that you pick up. And you allow him to run your franchise. What did you expect? And then as you hear, he wasn't this, he wasn't that. The direction that they were going in wasn't a positive direction. Nobody was supposed to give him he embarrassed the organization with the Spygate, which he did, but you know, the Spygate thing to me was a scapegoat to fire him. That was the last straw, the proverbial nail in the coffin. But again, I hear the Tom Jackson of the world talking about pointing the finger at Pat Bowlen. I don't hear anybody talking. And there's nobody pointing finger at the obvious problem in terms of this situation. The guy who got everybody saying and hired Josh McDaniels. And I think Pat Bowlen is one of the best owners in football. Without question. But he swung and missed on it. He swung and missed and whiffed on this hire. Again, you had to question what this franchise was doing. And me and a friend of mine had this discussion many times. When they traded Jay Cutler, basically because Jay Cutler didn't trust McDaniels for trying to move him for Matt Castle. And I wouldn't trust McDaniels either if he was trying to move me for Matt Castle. I know Matt Castle's playing well now, but at that particular time, Matt Castle was a backup quarterback. But again, you allowed this dude to dictate what direction your franchise was going in. You allowed him to just to do anything he wanted. You gave him free reign for some reason. And it's similar. I mean, it's very similar with Minnesota did with Brad Childress. You can say all you want about Brad Childress being not this, being that, being not being able to manage players and personalities and all that. The bottom line is he gave Brad Childress free reign to make decisions in terms of make personnel decisions, to kiss Brett Favre's ass every offseason. To get rid of Randy Moss, even though Ziggy Wolf wasn't no part of that. And you really think about it. Think about the coaches that have been fired and the direction of their organization that they're going in. In terms of Denver, Minnesota, Dallas. And I've said this many times, as long as Jerry Jones is at the forefront as far as being general manager, facing a franchise, that team will never go anywhere. I don't care how much talent they have. They'll never do anything. Minnesota might, who knows with Minnesota? They might have hit a home run with Leslie Frazier. Though they're going to have to rebuild and give him time to get that program situated. But they're really not going. They're really not going anywhere anytime soon. Have some older players on that roster. Have some things that they need to get done. Some pieces that need to be filled. It's in the offseason. And Denver right now has no identity. And just frankly, I mean, they don't have any direction. They got fortunate with the whole Kyle Orton thing because Kyle Orton looks like he has a good 3 to 4 or 5 years left where he can play at a high level. So, they basically wasted their first round pick because of Tim Tebow. So we're these three franchises that have allowed these coaches to that really don't have two of them that allow their coaches free reign and to run, basically run roughshod are not going anywhere anytime soon. And it certainly should be a lesson to these franchises around the league on what not to do and how to run your organization. Still to come on the first edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, this prime time edition. We will come back with the final segment, wrap up the program, and start and finish what we started at. We'll be right back. Welcome back to this latest edition of Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, this prime time edition as we wrap up the program, as we get ready to wrap up the program. And, of course, we begun 10 minutes after the 9 o'clock hour. We begun with the Albert Haynesworth saga hopefully coming to an abrupt end as the Washington Redskins have decided to suspend Albert Haynesworth for the remainder of the season, which consists, of course, of 4 games. Haynesworth will not be paid for this if the suspension is upheld, which will come out to about roughly $3.5 million. Haynesworth allegedly had refused to run the defense as far as the 3-4, participate in certain packages, to do, was not listening to the coaches. It got so bad to where he was not speaking to Mike Shanahan. He told Bruce Allen that he wasn't going to speak to Shanahan, and you know, at that point, of course, Mike Shanahan, you know, basically said, "Hey, enough is enough," and they decided to again part ways with him for the rest of the season. Of course, in the off season, they still have to figure out what they're going to do as far as, you know, he's still under contract, but I'm sure as far as, you know, whether they're going to try to trade him or just outright cut him. So we'll find, they're going to see what they, you know, we'll see what they do in regards to that. To me, this was a long time. This thing was a long time coming. It should have happened a long time. It should have happened in the preseason, as far as I'm concerned. You know, he takes a roster bonus of $21 million, still refuses to show up to mini camps, OTAs, etc. Goes out there and fails a million conditioning tests. This was not the first time he was deactivated. He was deactivated for the Indianapolis game, of course, coming off his brother-in-law's, his half-brother's funeral, as he didn't practice that week. And it was just always something with Albert Haynesworth, and it was just something to me that helped drag this team down. Now, is it the primary thing? Is it that the primary reason why the Redskins are 5-7? No, they're just not a very talented football team. But it's something that kind of helped the Redskins hostage. It helped the locker room hostage from an emotional standpoint. You know, players answering questions on him weekly, it seemed like. Coaches have to answer questions about him, you know, on a weekly and daily basis. And when you're trying to build something, and I said this, earlier this year, when I thought that they should have parted ways with him, there's no way that they could ever move forward with him on your football team. There's no way that could have ever happened. And to me, this is 99.9% Albert Haynesworth. You know, Mike Shanahan, certain situations could have been handled differently. You know, as far as the Indianapolis benching, thought he should have played that game. But I thought Shanahan should have cut him loose much earlier. But for the most part, this is all on Albert Haynesworth. He gets paid, and he basically after once he got his money in 2009, it was, you know, I'm a two-out player. No matter what, and that's it. I've got my money, and, you know, forget everybody else. And that's basically been his mentality since. So, again, to me, this is addition by subtraction for the Washington Redskins. This is a positive day in the Washington Redskins, if you're a Washington Redskins fan, as far as I'm concerned. Moving forward, don't have to worry about one guy just basically having all the attention, having all the discussion centered around him. I could just focus on trying to win football games and try to build something moving forward. That's going to wrap this prime time edition up of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Thank you for joining me. I certainly will be back, and I will see you soon. I will have next time you see me hear me on the air, certainly have a pleasant surprise for my listening audience. Again, it's a surprise and a welcome and certainly pleasant surprise for my audience. And, you have to wait then to get that surprise. Have a great evening, and I'll see you next time on the next edition.